Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking with a blind marathoner and his celebrity guide, and we scheduled this show to run around the time of the Boston Marathon.
We'll speak with Eric Manser, a blind accessibility engineer at IBM, and Peter Sagal, host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, in what we're calling the ultimate game of Not My Job. We'll speak with them about their experiences running the 2014 Boston Marathon together, how they got together as a team, the special trust required to run as partners, and what happens when things don't quite go as planned. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Peter Sagal.
It's ironic, since you use the word disabled, but we're actually talking about somebody who are extremely able, and therefore helping them out is not as hard as you might think.
Peter thought he was speaking in generalities, but in particular, his blind partner for running the Boston Marathon not only runs marathons and has run 15 of them by now, but he's also competed in 7 half Ironmans and 1 full Ironman, and in the process has set a world Ironman record for a visually impaired athlete, and he still holds a YMCA swimming record for the 50-yard freestyle for anybody, impaired or not, and an American record on the 1,500-meter freestyle swim from the 2012 Paralympic trials. So this is all in addition to holding down a serious job. He is quite able.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
Mystic Access, providing assistive technology audio tutorials and trainings designed to empower and motivate. Products are created by the blind for the blind. More information available at mysticaccess.com, where the magic is in learning. Let's start by meeting Eric and Peter. Can you start by introducing yourselves?
Sure. I'm Peter Sagal. I am a host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR and occasional sighted guide at marathons.
Yep. And I'm Eric Manser. I am 43 years old and I live in Littleton, Mass. I work for IBM in accessibility of technology, and I compete around the country as a blind athlete in marathons and triathlons.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is Eric and Peter's experiences running the 2014 Boston Marathon together as blind runner and sighted guide.
So we'll talk in a little bit about your experiences running the marathon together, but maybe you can tell us how you both got together to be partners in the first place.
Well, I'll tell it from my perspective, and then Eric can tell it from his. Some years ago, it was in fact 2013, I was asked just out of the blue by a group of people called Team with a Vision. They're a fundraising arm for the Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, if I'd be interested in running as a blind guide at Boston. And I did so in 2013 with another gentleman named William Greer from Austin, Texas. And as I've now told in many different venues, we were 100 yards away from the bombs when they went off that year. We had just finished. So like a lot of people, I determined who were there that year. I determined that I wanted to come back and run it again. And so I got in touch with the Team of the Vision, and they invited me to come run it as Eric's guide, and which I was happy to do. So that's how Eric and I met. We met, the night before at a reception for Team of the Vision, and we ran the marathon the next day. Nothing blew up.
Well, that answers that question. You obviously did not practice together beforehand.
No, right. We didn't really have a chance.
You know, in the blind athlete and sighted guide relationship, oftentimes that is the case. And, you know, I've always felt and have expressed, you know, in various venues that, you know, what I find the relationship to be, it's almost like a fast tracking of that sort of comfort level between two people. It has a really remarkable way of, you know, fostering fast trust and comfort working together, and, you know, where you don't always have, you know, much of an opportunity ahead of time to really work together and develop a familiarity with each other. It really kind of fast tracks that whole process. And so, you know, Peter was tremendous in kind of adapting and learning the specifics about the, you know, the nature of my vision loss and what, you know, what I could and couldn't see at this point. And he really just rolled with it, very adaptable and open. And it was just really a wonderful working relationship right from the get-go.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you do have 26 miles to figure it out. So by the end of it, I thought I was pretty good at guiding Eric.
Absolutely.
Not move much, but
the biggest selling point, I mean, other than, you know, Peter's remarkable, wonderful personality was, you know, everyone assured me that I would be laughing the whole way. I wouldn't even notice as the miles floated by. And that proved to be the case until about mile 20 when, you know, it would take it would take an act of God to, you know, to kind of make mile 20 feel good. So it was kind of.
I don't remember a lot of laughing at that time.
Before we get into the details of your race together, I know, Eric, you have a little bit of vision. Can you describe what amount of vision you do have for our listeners?
Absolutely. I have a condition called retinitis pigmentosa. It's a degenerative eye disease. So I've gathered over the years that I was diagnosed unusually young. I was 5 years old, and I was diagnosed at Mass Eye and Ear with this condition that does typically lead to blindness. As a younger person, I had much more sight than I have today. What I have remaining now, I basically describe as if you were looking through a keyhole that was covered with wax paper. And another little bonus side effect of the RP is cataracts. So the acuity is diminished due to the cloudiness of cataracts. And so, you know, it does create challenges in terms of being able to detect, you know, what's below or off to the side of your field of vision. And that's where, especially in a crowded race like the Boston Marathon, where people are really packed in like sardines, having the help of a sighted guide is a wonderful benefit to make sure that you're not tripping people or especially as people like jockey across your path. It feels like they very much appear out of nowhere. And so having someone there to help call out obstacles and things like that is remarkably helpful.
The 2014 Boston Marathon had even more runners than usual. Did that make a bigger problem than usual for you?
It was pretty crowded. I remember the start of the race for the first few miles having to work pretty hard to clear away. One of the problems, and Eric, maybe you can confirm this, is because we're running essentially as charity runners, at least I was anyway, you're sort of in the back of the crowd. Normally you're seated with people who are running your own pace. So for someone like Eric, who's a pretty talented athlete, blind or not, he's going to go faster than most of the people he's starting with. So the first couple of miles, there was a lot of, hello, we're passing you, blind person passing you, blind person passing you. And in fact, we happened to fall in with these two other guides who had volunteered to guide another runner. And that particular runner, their guidee, had dropped out. So they were just running along. They had nothing, you know, they're running the marathon. And they kind of joined our effort. And one of them, if I remember correctly, is ex-military, ex-army, 20 years in the army. So he was like in front of us and he's using his army command voice, clearing the way. And it was awesome. I told him after the race that I need him to precede me through life, shouting at people to get out of the way in that voice. So yeah, I do remember fighting our way through a lot of crowds in the beginning. And then, of course, it spreads out.
Yeah, and that was absolutely, I mean, that was like a surprise benefit of that day because, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, they did expand and knowing, you know, the significance of the 2014 race following the tragic events of the 2013 race, like they did expand the field. I think previously it had been a max field size of 25,000 runners. Well, they went to 30,000 and beyond, I think, for the 2014 race. So we definitely, you know, that congestion was not imagined. That was very real. And as Peter mentioned, like when you start towards the back, that's, you know, 25,000 runners ahead of you that you need to work your way up through. And it's nice that they have wave starts. So they'll divide you up in chunks, but, you know, you still got however many bodies between you and mile 26.2 that you need to work your way through. And so as we started running, Peter, just me and Peter running together, you know, we may have picked off a mile or two, and then all of a sudden, as we just happened upon my friend Corvin, who's a very talented visually impaired athlete from California. He was running with Dan Streetman, who's the ex-military drill sergeant that Peter was talking about, and also Ron Abramson, all really good friends that. Together, we made a pack of five of us, and it made such an amazing difference just from my own experience previously. Like, you know, running with a single guide in a crowd includes its challenges. I mean, as effective as the guide can be, you know, you still have a crowd of people around you that can bump elbows on one side, and you know, a single guide can't cover it all. And so what we did as a group of five of us, I mean, essentially we happened to create like this, what I've called like a rolling motorcade.
Yeah. So I called it the flying wedge.
Exactly. And so, I mean, we were basically kind of rumbling down the middle of the marathon course, and it was an undeniable presence. Like, you know, it didn't hurt at all that we had Peter Sagal with us, because like he was so well known. I mean, it was every minute or two you just hear people responding so wonderfully to him being there, like, you're Peter Sagal. And you know, aside from the fact that he's a famous and much loved NPR radio host, he also writes for Runner's World magazine. And so like he's running amongst his audience, you know, like everyone along the way was like, so I mean, it was just this wonderful, I mean, it created this outpouring of just, you know, kindness and support from those around us. And it was, I mean, you know, I don't think I'll ever experience anything quite like that again. It was really a remarkable experience of that day.
Well, I would guess that kind of crowd support helps a lot. I've run a lot of these races in the past when I had partial vision, and I've never run a marathon, but you know, just you get tired at the end of these longer races, and just having the crowd to pump you along can really help.
Yeah.
And especially true in Boston, because the crowd gets really thick and excited just when you need them, as you get to Newton and then crest the hill and start heading into the city.
So the other thing I was curious about is in a marathon race, I mean, you probably each individually have very different paces, and you were matched up just kind of arbitrarily. How did that work?
Well, not arbitrarily. The rule is that you want the guide to be able to be at a pace, a natural pace that's faster than the guidee. So, for example, my first Boston 2013, I had recently run a marathon at like a 3:30 pace. And so my guidee wanted me to run at like a 3:45. So the assumption was that I'd be able to help him do that without a lot of effort.
Got it.
And with a relatively good chance of being able to make it all the way, because you don't want to leave him out there.
Yes, right.
I don't remember how it was calculated with Eric. I think I wasn't in very good shape, but I remember Eric, you can again tell me if I'm wrong. You had had an injury some months before.
I had torn a meniscus, so I had knee surgery in the November prior to that year's marathon in April. So
I was assured that Eric would not be looking to run a really fast marathon, and I knew I wasn't capable of it. So,
right. Yeah, I read that part on his blog, and I was kind of amazed you were running at all so shortly after a knee injury.
Well, yeah, it was once running or fitness in general becomes such a part of your life, like it's, you know, on any day where I don't get to exercise or do my workout, like I feel out of sorts. And so it was like I felt a sense of urgency to kind of get back and, you know, not defying doctor's orders or anything like that or you know, risking my chances of re-injuring. But, you know, there's definitely that drive and that urge to kind of get back to what you're used to, so to speak.
Yeah, I think many athletes are like that. I mean, if you're used to exercising, as we are also, you miss it if you don't have the opportunity to do it for some reason.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I understand you guys actually got separated during this marathon from reading your blog.
Well, what happened was I was having a tough day for reasons that I'm still not curious about. It was a little hot. I was getting really dizzy. And we had gotten lucky in that we had come across another guide, again, someone who had lost his own guidee, who had dropped out of the race. And this guy was just finishing the race on his own because he was, you know, out there. And he started running with us, and my dizziness increased. And I remember saying to Eric, I'm going to have to hand you off to this guy because I don't think I can finish it. And they went off, and I stopped, and I got a drink. I had another drink and then another drink, and I felt a lot better. So I started running again, and I managed to catch up with Eric and his guide. about a mile or so down the way. And so I was able to finish the race with Eric.
Wow. Oh, that's nice. You eventually did catch up with each other.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Yep.
But you found another guide to pass him off to, so he wasn't stranded and you didn't both have to stop.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I was really worried because I was starting to feel pretty bad and a little dizzy. And I will tell you, having done it three times, that the guide's nightmare is ruining your guidee's race because you can't hack it.
I'll bet that could weigh heavily on you.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
That raises an interesting question. Is there any kind of practice of people running with a spare guide in case somebody does get sick?
Well, I did it because in our 2015 race, I was feeling even less confident my ability to run a marathon than I had the year before, which wasn't great, just because of my own stuff and my own training. I mean, I knew that my participation in it helped bring visibility. They said, hey, you raised $60,000 for us by running these races. So I said, yes, I will come do it, but you need to get another guide for Eric because I am afraid I won't make it and I don't want to leave him out there in the lurch. So they did. And Eric, please help me with his name.
Joe DeGutis ran with us and yeah, it worked out. From that experience the year before where we were a motorcade of five of us, like I feel like I've become spoiled by having more than one guide available, which is, especially in a crowded race like Boston where you have water stops every mile and people are cutting across your path, it makes a nice difference. Mm-hmm.
And this guy was great. I don't think he not run a marathon before. He was doing something really foolish. I forget what it was. And here's the funny thing is that despite my anxiety about not being able to finish, I was doing great. I was keeping up with Joe. I was keeping up with Eric. We were having a much better day, in fact, than we had in 2014. And then around mile 23, I had to stop and use a porta potty, which I had terrified. So I jumped in there, did what I had to do, got out, and almost caught them. Judging from finishing times, I crossed the line like 30 seconds after they did. So frustrating because I really wanted to finish with them. But
finishing together would have been great.
Well, that's good. You had some backup though.
Yes. And so, I mean, it turns out I needed it for just, I mean, I thought I was going to get exhausted, wounded, hurt, and have to drop out halfway. I didn't. I was feeling great, but I just,
It was close to 20 minutes faster than the time from the year before. So, I mean, that was a legitimate race for all of us, Peter.
Yeah, we did. It was a much better race. I mean, it was really fun. It was, the weather was cool and wet, but that's often better. And Joe's company was terrific, and he's just one of those people who makes everything seem a little easier for everybody around him.
And how many guides do you have lined up this year, Eric?
Well, it's funny because of how spoiled I've become, I guess. I have two guides that are going to split the distance. So I've got one, very kind gentleman, Gavin, who's going to run the first half with me, followed by another kind gentleman, Andrew, who's going to take, mile 13.1 through the finish with me. And then we've got another athlete named Shelley, who has her own bib. Like, she qualified on her own merit, very graciously has agreed, hearing of my, desire to have more than one guide with me, has agreed to, give up her own race and use her bib to stick with us for the whole way. So I'm going to have Shelley with me the entire way, and then the two gentlemen will split the race with me.
So in the introduction, you guys both talked about the amount of trust it takes between the both of you to do this as a team. Usually when I've run with people, it's taken running with them a few times before I'm fully confident and trust what they're going to do and we know our signals. How did that work for you guys? Did it just take a time to get used to it?
What I have found is that, as I alluded to earlier, you just have to get really comfortable really quick. And I usually try and tell my guides, don't be shy, certainly didn't have to worry about that with Peter. He's very outspoken, and which is tremendously helpful in the athlete or blind athlete and sighted guide relationship. But, if there's anything that needs to be communicated with regard to safety or with regard to changing how I'm doing or, where I'm positioned, then shout it out. Don't be fearful of offending me, or don't worry about politeness. All the niceties go out the window when it comes to being out there and navigating safely and making sure not just my own safety, but the safety of those around us. Other things that have helped as a blind athlete are you know, like earlier in my days of running, like I never even wore a bib that identified me as visually impaired or blind. And I've adopted that, like started wearing those just for everyone else's sake as much as for my own. Using a tether to stay connected with Peter helps a great deal, you know, not only for the fact that it allows him to help me steer or help, you know, course correct or change my direction, but you know, it's another visual cue to those around us that there's something a little bit different about these two runners that are attached mm-hmm. and running together in that way. So yeah, it just really makes you vocal and outspoken, and you know, politeness is great, but you know, there's a time and a place, and don't be concerned about offending me or anything like that.
And it worked out great. I was very lucky in that I had had the experience of running with William Greer the year before. And even though William's visual problems are different, very different than Eric's, and he needed different kind of guiding, I was like, oh, okay, well, in general, I can do this. You just need to listen and do what they ask you to do. But one thing I do remember as sort of a case in point of what this process was like is it took me a while to figure this out, but Eric has mentioned his night blindness. And he had mentioned that to me before, but I didn't really understand what that means, which is that what was to me a shadow, something that I wouldn't even notice.
Oh, that counts.
Was to him sudden pitch blackness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Which not only is difficult to navigate in, but it's also a little disconcerting.
Yes.
Right.
So I learned, I mean, and it took me a while to figure that out, but I was like, all right, I figured that out. So I began to learn that if to watch for shadows, again, ones I wouldn't notice. Mm-hmm. And if there was a, if there was one coming up, I let Eric know, and that became part of what we were doing. Yep. So yeah, it was a little bit of learning by doing, but you know, it's not that hard.
As you said, you have 26 miles to learn, I guess.
You have 26 miles to learn. You're both on the same side. Nobody wants to screw it up.
Yep.
No, it's
yep.
it's not like I'm trying. No, I want to make him trip, damn it.
So you've accommodated pretty easily to different people that you had to run with and help along.
Yeah, and keep in mind, we're talking about blind athletes. We're talking about people who are capable of running a marathon.
Right.
And that puts you in a whole other realm. Yep. Of what you might be doing if you were doing a home visit or any other kind of mm-hmm. assistance to anybody with any kind of disability. You're talking about helping somebody who has already trained successfully to do this, just do it on the day. I mean, so you're talking about, I mean, it's ironic since you use the word disabled, but we're actually talking about somebody who are extremely able, and therefore helping them out is not as hard as you might think.
Well, that sounds like really a fun and rewarding experience for both of you.
I loved it. In fact, what's interesting is I have not run a marathon since the first time I ran as a guide, nor have I wanted to. I've told a lot of people this. I might have told Eric on the day that I ran, I think, my 13th marathon. It had gone pretty well. I ran it pretty fast. I sort of got to as good as I was ever going to get. And I had run out of motivation. I was like, well, why do I want to keep running these things? I'm never going to run any faster than that. And, you know, they're expensive and I can do other things with my time. And then I was introduced to the wonderful world of guiding by Josh Warren, then the head of the team for Vision. And I found it much more gratifying than running for my own. So I'm sad that I can't do it this year.
I'm always, always blown away, humbled, and thrilled whenever a sighted guide that I've raced with expresses to me that, you know, when I thank them profusely, and I know Peter has, you know, resisted my claims that I think it's one of the most selfless things that someone can do for another person, but, you know, to hear guides tell me that, you know, they get as much out of it as I do. I mean, I'm constantly blown away by that. And I mean, as you said, Peter, Torpy, like, you know, it's extremely gratifying and rewarding. It's just an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great. And as a matter of fact, it's like, it's so much better than running for oneself, I find. I'm sort of starting to judge you, Eric, because that's all you're doing. I mean, come on.
I'm an egomaniac.
Apparently. But no, it's true. And I love it. And it's hard to imagine just going out there and running a marathon for my own self, because what's the point? Maybe in Bordeaux, that would be nice.
Yeah. So, Peter, did you have any experience with blind people before you started as a guide?
Very little. I think even less than average, just by the luck of the draw. I had no friends who are, you know, visually impaired beyond needing really thick glasses. The one experience I had, and this actually was really kind of helpful, I was a much younger man. I was asked to be the host for a blind playwright. And he was coming to Minneapolis where I lived, and I was asked to sort of look after him. His name is Lynn Manning. And, you know, if anything, that was a great lesson that I needed to learn, which is that blind people are not weird. They just can't see very well. And other than that, you know, it's there's really no difference between anybody else. I did have – and that, you know, is something, if you were as sheltered as I was, is something I needed to learn.
Now for this week's final item, some advice from Eric and Peter about getting together as a blind and sighted running pair and where you might be able to connect with other people so that you can get involved.
So where would you direct people to find out more about finding running buddies and working with other people?
I was just going to suggest, I mean, I would reiterate what our friend Kyle Robidoux, I'm a frequent listener, so I heard you guys interview Kyle a few weeks back, and he mentioned unitedinstride.com, which is a wonderful resource that was created by a good friend, Richard Hunter, as well as Mass Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and it's a North American database of willing sighted guides and blind or visually impaired athletes looking to get out and stay active. And so just tremendous. When you go on there and create a profile, you plug in all your demographic information, your location, your running goals, your pace, your distances, that sort of thing. And then what it enables you to do is now that as a registered user, you can go back in and plug in your zip code and it will expose all of the willing guides or blind or visually impaired athletes in your vicinity and allow you to make those connections and start those relationships.
And that's a great organization. And we had a really wonderful interview with Kyle.
Yeah.
And when you started this, though, Peter, United in Stride wasn't around. What was your connection?
You are talking to me today because this guy named Josh Warren, who had a habit of doing things like this. He's no longer with Team of the Vision, but he just reached out to me completely blindly.
So to speak.
And he said, hey, would you like to be a sighted guide at this year's Boston Marathon? And for a lot of reasons that I won't get into now, it was a good idea for me to do it. So I was like, all right. That is how I got into the sighted guide business. Somebody cold calling me or cold tweeting me, actually, at just the right time.
Wow.
And we'll have links to all of those resources, as well as to the episode of Eyes on Success where we talked about United in Stride, in our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1617. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about voice. The voice technology is a general approach for seeing with sound. It uses visual input from a webcam or PC display that is converted to audio output. We'll speak with Pranav Lal about the technology and how it can be used to visualize data and provide the blind with a representation of the world around them. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.